Five on a Treasure Island by Enid Blyton, read by Jan Francis. Chapter 1. A Great Surprise.
Mother, have you heard about our summer holidays yet? Said Julian at the breakfast table. Can we go to Polzeath as usual?
I'm afraid not, said his mother. They are quite full up this year. The three children at the breakfast table looked at one another in great disappointment. They did so love the house at Polzeath. The beach was so lovely there too, and the bathing was fine.
Cheer up, said Daddy. I dare say we'll find somewhere else just as good for you. And anyway, Mother and I won't be able to go with you this year. Has Mother told you?
No, said Anne. Oh, Mother, is it true? Can't you really come with us on our holidays? You always do.
Well, this time Daddy wants me to go to Scotland with him, said Mother. All by ourselves. And as you are really getting big enough to look after yourselves now, we thought it would be rather fun for you to have a holiday on your own too. But now that you can't go to Polzeath, I don't really quite know where to send you.
What about Quintin's? Suddenly said Daddy.
Quintin was his brother, the children's uncle. They had only seen him once and had been rather frightened of him. He was a very tall, frowning man, a clever scientist who spent all his time studying. He lived by the sea, but that was about all that the children knew of him.
Quintin, said Mother, pursing her lips. Whatever made you think of him? I shouldn't think he'd want the children messing about in his little house.
Well, said Daddy, I had to see Quentin's wife in town the other day about a business matter, and I don't think things are going too well for them. Fanny said she'd be quite glad if she could hear of one or two people to live with her for a while, to bring a little money in. Their house is by the sea, you know. It might be just the thing for the children. Fanny is very nice. She would look after them well.
Yes, and she has a child of her own, too, hasn't she? Said the children's mother. Now, let me see. What's her name? Something funny.
Yes, Georgina.
How old would she be? About 11, I should think.
Same age as me, said Dick. Fancy having a cousin we've never seen. She must be jolly lonely all by herself. I've got Julian and Anne to play with, but Georgina is just one on her own. I should think she'd be glad to see us.
Well, your Aunt Fanny said that her Georgina would love a bit of company, said Daddy. You know, I really think that would solve our difficulty. If we telephone to Fanny and arrange for the children to go there. It would help Fanny, I'm sure, and Georgina would love to have someone to play with in the holidays. And we should know that our children were safe. The children began to feel rather excited. It would be fun to go to a place they had never been to before and stay with an unknown cousin.
Are there cliffs and rocks and sands there? Asked Anne. Is it a nice place?
I don't remember it very well, said Daddy, but I feel sure it's an exciting kind of place. Anyway, you'll love it. It's called Kirin Bay. Your Aunt Fanny has lived there all her life and wouldn't leave it for anything.
Oh, Daddy, do telephone to Aunt Fanny and ask her if we can go there, cried Dick. I just feel as if it's the right place somehow. It sounds sort of adventurous.
Oh, you always say that wherever you go, said Daddy with a laugh. All right, I'll ring up now and see if there's any chance. They had all finished their breakfast and they got up to wait for Daddy to telephone. He went out into the hall, and they heard him putting the call through.
I hope it's all right for us, said Julian.
I wonder what Georgina's like.
Funny name, isn't it? More like a boy's than a girl's. So, she's 11, a year younger than I am. Same age as you, Dick, and a year older than you, Anne. She ought to fit in with us all right. The four of us ought to have a fine time together.
Daddy came back in about 10 minutes' time, and the children knew at once that he had fixed up everything. He smiled round at them.
Well, that's settled, he said. Your Aunt Fanny is delighted about it. She says it will be awfully good for Georgina to have company, because she's such a lonely little girl, always going off by herself. And she will love looking after you all. Only you'll have to be careful not to disturb your Uncle Quentin. He's working very hard, and he isn't very good-tempered when he's disturbed.
We'll be as quiet as mice in the house, said Dick. Honestly, we will. Oh, goody, goody. When are we going, Daddy?
Next week, if Mother can manage it, said Daddy.
Mother nodded her head. Yes, she said. There's nothing much to get ready for them. Just bathing suits and jerseys and jeans. They all wear the same.
How lovely it will be to wear jeans again, said Anne, dancing round. I'm tired of wearing school tunics. I want to wear shorts or a bathing suit and go bathing and climbing with the boys.
Well, you'll soon be doing it, said Mother with a laugh. Remember to put ready any toys or books you want, won't you? Not many, please, because there won't be a great deal of room.
Anne wanted to take all her 15 dolls with her last year, said Dick. Do you remember, Anne? Weren't you funny?
No, I wasn't, said Anne, going red. I love my dolls, and I just couldn't choose which to take, so I thought I'd take them all. There's nothing funny about that.
And do you remember the year before Anne wanted to take the rocking horse? Said Dick with a giggle.
Mother chimed in. You know, I remember a little boy called Dick who put aside 2 gollywogs, 1 teddy bear, 3 toy dogs, 2 toy cats, and his old monkey to take down to Polzeath one year, she said.
Then it was Dick's turn to go red. He changed the subject at once.
Daddy, are we going by train or by car? He asked.
By car, said Daddy. We can pile everything into the boot.
Well, what about Tuesday?
That would suit me well, said Mother. Then we could take the children down, come back, and do our own packing at leisure, and start off for Scotland on the Friday.
Yes, we'll arrange for Tuesday.
So, Tuesday it was. The children counted the days eagerly, and Anne marked one off the calendar each night. The week seemed a very long time in going, but at last Tuesday did come. Dick and Julian, who shared a room, woke up at about the same moment and stared out of the nearby window.
"It's a lovely day! Hooray!"
cried Julian, leaping out of bed.
"I don't know why, but it always seems very important that it should be sunny on the first day of a holiday. Let's wake Anne."
Anne slept in the next room. Julian ran in and shook her.
"Wake up! It's Tuesday and the sun's shining!"
Anne woke up with a jump and stared at Julian joyfully.
"It's come at last," she said. "I thought it never would. Oh, isn't it an exciting feeling to go away for a holiday?"
They started soon after breakfast. Their car was a big one, so it held them all very comfortably. Mother sat in front with Daddy, and the 3 children sat behind, their feet on 2 suitcases. In the luggage plate at the back of the car were all kinds of odds and ends and 1 small trunk. Mother really thought they had remembered everything. Along the crowded London roads they went, slowly at first, and then, as they left the town behind, more quickly. Soon they were right into the open country, and the car sped along fast. The children sang songs to themselves, as they always did when they were happy.
"Are we picnicking soon?"
asked Anne, feeling hungry all of a sudden.
"Yes," said Mother, "but not yet. It's only 11 o'clock. We shan't have lunch till at least 12:30, Anne."
"Oh, gracious," said Anne. "I know I can't last out till then."
So her mother handed her some chocolate, and she and the boys munched happily, watching the hills, woods and fields as the car sped by.
The picnic was lovely. They had it on the top of a hill, in a sloping field that looked down into a sunny valley. Anne didn't very much like a big brown cow who came up close and stared at her, but it went away when Daddy told it to. The children ate enormously, and Mother said that instead of having a tea picnic at 4:30, they would have to go to a tea house somewhere because they had eaten all the tea sandwiches as well as the lunch ones.
"What time shall we be at Aunt Fanny's?" asked Julian, finishing up the very last sandwich and wishing there were more.
"About 6 o'clock, with luck," said Daddy. "Now, who wants to stretch their legs a bit? We've another long spell in the car, you know."
The car seemed to eat up the miles as it purred along. Tea time came, and then the three children began to feel excited all over again.
"We must watch out for the sea," said Dick. "I could smell it somewhere near."
He was right. The car suddenly topped a hill, and there was the shining blue sea, calm and smooth in the evening sun. The three children gave a yell.
"There it is!
Isn't it marvellous?
Oh, I want to bathe this very minute!"
"We shan't be more than 20 minutes now before we're at Kirin Bay," said Daddy. "We've made good time. You'll see the bay soon. It's quite a big one, with a funny sort of island at the entrance of the bay."
The children looked out for it as they drove along the coast. Then Julian gave a shout.
"There it is! That must be Kirin Bay! Look, Dick, isn't it lovely and blue?"
"And look at the rocky little island guarding the entrance of the bay," said Dick. "I'd like to visit that."
"Well, I've no doubt you will," said Mother. "Now, let's look out for Aunt Fanny's house. It's called Kirin Cottage." They soon came to it. It stood on the low cliff overlooking the bay and was a very old house indeed. It wasn't really a cottage, but quite a big house built of old white stone. Roses climbed over the front of it, and the garden was gay with flowers.
"Here's Kirin Cottage," said Daddy as he stopped the car in front of it. "It's supposed to be about 300 years old. Now, where's Quentin? Oh, hello, there's Fanny."
Chapter 2. The Strange Cousin. The children's aunt had been watching for the car. She came running out of the old wooden door as soon as she saw it draw up outside. The children liked the look of her at once.
"Welcome to Kirin," she cried. "Hello, all of you. It's lovely to see you. And what big children!"
There were kisses all round, and then the children went into the house. They liked it. It felt old and rather mysterious somehow, and the furniture was old and very beautiful.
"Where's Georgina?"
asked Anne, looking round for her unknown cousin.
"Oh, the naughty girl. I told her to wait in the garden for you," said her aunt. "Now she's gone off somewhere. I must tell you, children, you may find George a bit difficult at first. She's always been one on her own, you know, and at first may not like you being here. But you mustn't take any notice of that. She'll be all right in a short time. I was very glad, for George's sake, that you were able to come. She badly needs other children to play with."
"Do you call her George?" asked Anne in surprise. "I thought her name was Georgina."
"So it is," said her aunt. "But George hates being a girl, and we have to call her George as if she was a boy. The naughty girl won't answer if we call her Georgina."
The children thought that Georgina sounded rather exciting. They wished she would come, but she didn't. Their Uncle Quentin suddenly appeared instead. He was a most extraordinary-looking man, very tall, very dark, and with a rather fierce frown on his wide forehead.
"Hello, Quentin," said Daddy. "It's a long time since I've seen you. I hope these three won't disturb you very much in your work."
"Quentin is working on a very difficult book," said Aunt Fanny, "but I've given him a room all to himself on the other side of the house, so I don't expect he will be disturbed."
Their uncle looked at the three children and nodded to them.
The frown didn't come off his face, and they all felt a little scared, and were glad he was to work in another part of the house.
"Where's George?"
he said in a deep voice.
"Gone off somewhere again," said Aunt Fanny, vexed. "I told her she was to stay here and meet her cousins."
"She wants spanking,"
said Uncle Quentin.
The children couldn't quite make out whether he was joking or not.
"Well, children, I hope you have a good time here, and maybe you will knock a little common sense into George."
There was no room at Kieran Cottage for Mother and Daddy to stay the night, so after a hurried supper, they left to stay at a hotel in the nearest town. They would drive back to London immediately after breakfast the next day. So they said goodbye to the children that night. Georgina still hadn't appeared.
"I'm sorry we haven't seen Georgina," said Mother. "Just give her our love and tell her we hope she'll enjoy playing with Dick, Julian and Anne."
Then Mother and Daddy went. The children felt a little bit lonely as they saw the big car disappear round the corner of the road, but Aunt Fanny took them upstairs to show them their bedrooms, and they soon forgot to be sad. The two boys were to sleep together in a room with slanting ceilings at the top of the house. It had a marvellous view of the bay. The boys were really delighted with it. Anne was to sleep with Georgina in a smaller room, whose windows looked over the moors at the back of the house. But one side window looked over the sea, which pleased Anne very much. It was a nice room, and red roses nodded their heads in at the window.
"I do wish Georgina would come," Anne said to her aunt. "I want to see what she's like."
"Well, she's a funny little girl," said her aunt. "She can be very rude and haughty, but she's kind at heart, very loyal, and absolutely truthful. Once she makes friends with you, she will always be your friend, but she finds it very difficult indeed to make friends, which is a great pity."
Anne suddenly yawned. The boys frowned at her, because they knew what would happen next, and it did.
"Poor Anne, how tired you are. You must all go to bed straightway and have a good long night. Then you will wake up quite fresh tomorrow," said Aunt Fanny.
"Anne, you are an idiot," said Dick crossly, when his aunt had gone out of the room. "You know quite well what grown-ups think as soon as we yawn. I did want to go down on the beach for a while."
"I'm so sorry," said Anne. "Somehow I couldn't help it. And anyway, you're yawning now, Dick. And Julian too."
So they were. They were as sleepy as could be with their long drive. Secretly, all of them longed to cuddle down into bed and shut their eyes.
"I wonder where Georgina is," said Anne, when she said good night to the boys and went to her own room. "Isn't she queer, not waiting to welcome us, and not coming into supper, and not even in yet? After all, she's sleeping in my room. Goodness knows what time she'll be in."
All the three children were fast asleep before Georgina came up to bed. They didn't hear her open Anne's door. They didn't hear her get undressed and clean her teeth. They didn't hear the creak of her bed as she got into it. They were so tired that they heard nothing at all until the sun awoke them in the morning. When Anne awoke, she couldn't at first think where she was. She lay in her little bed and looked up at the slanting ceiling and at the red roses that nodded at the open window, and suddenly remembered, all in a rush, where she was.
"I'm at Kieran Bay, and it's the holidays," she said to herself, and screwed up her legs with joy.
Then she looked across at the other bed. In it lay the figure of another child, curled up under the bedclothes. Anne could just see the top of a curly head, and that was all. When the figure stirred a little, Anne spoke.
"I say, are you Georgina?"
The child in the opposite bed sat up and looked across at Anne. She had very short, curly hair, almost as short as a boy's. Her face was burnt a dark brown with the sun. and her very blue eyes looked as bright as forget-me-nots in her face. But her mouth was rather sulky, and she had a frown like her father's. "No," she said, "I'm not Georgina."
"Oh," said Anne in surprise. "Then who are you?"
"I'm George," said the girl. "I shall only answer if you call me George. I hate being a girl. I won't be. I don't like doing the things that girls do. I like doing the things that boys do. I can climb better than any boy and swim faster too. I can sail a boat as well as any fisher boy on this coast. You're to call me George. Then I'll speak to you. But I shan't if you don't."
"Oh," said Anne, thinking that her new cousin was most extraordinary. "All right. I don't care what I call you. George is a nice name, I think. I don't much like Georgina. Anyway, you look like a boy."
"Do I really?" said George, the frown leaving her face for a moment. "Mother was awfully cross with me when I cut my hair short. I had hair all round my neck. It was awful." The two girls stared at one another for a moment.
"Don't you simply hate being a girl?" asked George.
"No, of course not," said Anne. "You see, I do like pretty frocks, and I love my dolls, and you can't do that if you're a boy."
"Pooh! Fancy bothering about pretty frocks," said George in a scornful voice. "And dolls. Well, you are a baby, that's all I can say." Anne felt offended.
"You're not very polite," she said. "You won't find that my brothers take much notice of you if you act as if you know everything. They're real boys, not pretend boys like you."
"Well, if they're going to be nasty to me, I shan't take any notice of them," said George, jumping out of bed. "I didn't want any of you to come anyway, interfering with my life here. I'm quite happy on my own. Now I've got to put up with that silly girl who likes frocks and dolls and two stupid boy cousins."
Anne felt that they had made a very bad beginning. She said no more, but got dressed herself too. She put on her grey jeans and a red jersey. George put on jeans too, and a boy's jersey. Just as they were ready, the boys hammered on their door.
"Aren't you ready? Is Georgina there? Cousin Georgina, come out and see us."
George flung open the door and marched out with her head high. She took no notice of the two surprised boys at all. She stalked downstairs. The other three children looked at one another.
"She won't answer if you call her Georgina," explained Anne. "She's awfully queer, I think. She says she didn't want us to come because we'll interfere with her. She laughed at me and was rather rude."
Julian put his arm round Anne, who looked a bit doleful.
"Cheer up," he said. "You've got us to stick up for you. Come on down to breakfast."
They were all hungry. The smell of bacon and eggs was very good. They ran down the stairs and said good morning to their aunt. She was just bringing the breakfast to the table. Their uncle was sitting at the head reading his paper. He nodded at the children. They sat down without a word, wondering if they were allowed to speak at meals. They always were at home, but their Uncle Quentin looked rather fierce. George was there, buttering a piece of toast. She scowled at the three children.
"Don't look like that, George," said her mother. "I hope you've made friends already. It will be fun for you to play together. You must take your cousins to see the bay this morning and show them the best places to bathe."
"I'm going fishing," said George.
Her father looked up at once.
"You are not," he said. "You are going to show a few good manners for a change and take your cousins to the bay. Do you hear me?"
"Yes," said George with a scowl exactly like her father's.
"Oh, we can go to the bay by ourselves all right, if George is going fishing," said Anne at once, thinking that it would be nice not to have George if she was in a bad temper.
"George will do exactly as she's told," said her father. "If she doesn't, I shall deal with her."
So, after breakfast, four children got ready to go down to the beach. An easy path led down to the bay, and they ran down happily.
Even George lost her frown as she felt the warmth of the sun and saw the dancing sparkles on the blue sea.
"You go fishing if you want to," said Anne, when they were down on the beach. "We won't tell tales of you. We don't want to interfere with you, you know. We've got ourselves a company, and if you don't want to be with us, you needn't."
"But we'd like you all the same, if you'd like to be with us," said Julian generously.
He thought George was rude and ill-mannered, but he couldn't help rather liking the look of the straight-backed, short-haired little girl with her brilliant blue eyes and sulky mouth. George stared at him.
"I'll see," she said. "I don't make friends with people just because they're my cousins or something silly like that. I only make friends with people if I like them."
"So do we," said Julian. "We may not like you, of course."
"Oh,"
said George, as if that thought hadn't occurred to her.
"Well, you may not, of course. Lots of people don't like me, now I come to think of it."
Anne was staring out over the blue bay. At the entrance to it lay a curious rocky island with what looked like an old ruined castle on the top of it.
"Isn't that a funny place?" she said. "I wonder what it's called."
"It's called Kirin Island," said George, her eyes as blue as the sea as she turned to look at it.
"It's a lovely place to go. If I like you, I may take you there some day, but I don't promise. The only way to get there is by boat."
"Who does the funny island belong to?" asked Julian.
George made a most surprising answer.
"It belongs to me," she said. "At least it will belong to me some day. It will be my very own island and my very own castle."
Chapter 3. A Queer Story and a New Friend. The three children stared at George in the greatest surprise. George stared back at them.
"What do you mean?" said Dick at last. "Kirin Island can't belong to you. You're just boasting."
"No, I'm not," said George. "You ask Mother. If you're not going to believe what I say, I won't tell you another word more. But I don't tell untruths. I think it's being a coward if you don't tell the truth, and I'm not a coward."
Julian remembered that Aunt Fanny had said that George was absolutely truthful, and he scratched his head and looked at George again.
How could she be possibly telling the truth?
"Well, of course we'll believe you if you tell us the truth," he said. "But it does sound a bit extraordinary, you know. Really, it does. Children don't usually own islands, even funny little ones like that."
"It isn't a funny little island," said George fiercely. "It's lovely. There are rabbits there, as tame as can be, and the big cormorants sit on the other side, and all kinds of gulls go there. The castle is wonderful too, even if it is all in ruins."
"It sounds fine," said Dick. "How does it belong to you, Georgina?"
George glared at him and didn't answer.
"Sorry," said Dick hastily. "I didn't mean to call you Georgina. I meant to call you George."
"Go on, George. Tell us how the island belongs to you," said Julian, slipping his arm through his sulky little cousin's.
She pulled away from him at once.
"Don't do that," she said. "I'm not sure that I want to make friends with you yet."
"All right, all right," said Julian, losing patience. "Be enemies or anything you like. We don't care. But we like your mother awfully, and we don't want her to think we won't make friends with you."
"Do you like my mother?" said George, her bright blue eyes softening a little. "Yes, she's a dear, isn't she? Well, all right. I'll tell you how Kirin Castle belongs to me. Come and sit down here in this corner where nobody can hear us."
They all sat down in a sandy corner of the beach. George looked across at the little island in the bay.
"It's like this," she said. "Years ago, my mother's people owned nearly all the land round here. Then they got poor and had to sell most of it. But they could never sell that little island because nobody thought it worth anything, especially as the castle had been ruined for years.
Fancy nobody wanting to buy a dear little island like that, said Dick. I'd buy it at once if I had the money.
All that's left of what Mother's family owned is our own house, Kirin Cottage, and a farm a little way off, and Kirin Island, said George. Mother says when I'm grown up it will be mine. She says she doesn't want it now either, so she's sort of given it to me. It belongs to me. It's my own private island, and I don't let anyone go there unless they get my permission.
The three children stared at her. They believed every word George said, for it was quite plain that the girl was speaking the truth. Fancy having an island of your very own. They thought she was very lucky indeed.
Oh, Georgina! I mean, George, said Dick. I do think you're lucky. It looks such a nice island. I hope you'll be friends with us and take us there one day soon. You simply can't imagine how we'd love it.
Well, I might, said George, pleased at the interest she had caused. I'll see. I never have taken anyone there yet, though some of the boys and girls round here have begged me to. But I don't like them, so I haven't.
There was a little silence as the four children looked out over the bay to where the island lay in the distance. The tide was going out. It almost looked as if they could wade over to the island. Dick asked if it was possible.
No, said George, his eyes shining.
I say, I've never seen an old wreck. Are there any to see?
Not now, said George. They've all been cleared up.
Except one, and that's the other side of the island. It's deep down in the water. You can just see the broken mast if you row over it on a calm day and look down into the water. That wreck really belongs to me too.
This time, the children really could hardly believe George. But she nodded her head firmly.
Yes, she said. It was a ship belonging to one of my great-great-great-grandfathers, or someone like that. He was bringing gold, big bars of gold, back in his ship, and it got wrecked off Kirin Island.
Ooh, what happened to the gold?
Asked Anne, her eyes round and big.
Nobody knows, said George. I expect it was stolen out of the ship. Divers have been down to sea, of course, but they couldn't find any gold.
Golly, this does sound exciting, said Julian. I wish I could see the wreck.
Well, we might perhaps go this afternoon when the tide is right down, said George. The water is so calm and clear today, we could see a bit of it.
Oh, how wonderful, said Anne. I do so want to see a real live wreck.
The others laughed.
Well, it won't be very alive, said Dick. I say, George, what about a bathe?
I must go and get Timothy first, said George. She got up.
Who's Timothy? Said Dick.
Can you keep a secret? Said George. Nobody must know at home.
Well, go on. What's the secret? Asked Julian. You can tell us. We're not sneaks.
Timothy is my very greatest friend, said George. I couldn't do without him. But Mother and Father don't like him, so I have to keep him in secret. I'll go and fetch him.
She ran off up the cliff path. The others watched her go. They thought she was the queerest girl they had ever known.
Who in the world can Timothy be? Wondered Julian. Some fisher boy, I suppose, that George's parents don't approve of.
The children lay back in the soft sand and waited. Soon they heard George's clear voice coming down from the cliff behind them.
Come on, Timothy! Come on!
They sat up and looked to see what Timothy was like. They saw no fisher boy, but instead a big black-and-white mongrel dog with an absurdly long tail and a big wide mouth that really seemed to grin. He was bounding all round George, mad with delight. She came running down to them.
This is Timothy, she said. Don't you think he is simply perfect?
As a dog, Timothy was far from perfect. He was the wrong shape. His head was too big. His ears were too pricked. His tail was too long.
and it was quite impossible to say what kind of dog he was supposed to be. But he was such a mad, friendly, clumsy, laughable creature that every one of the children adored him at once. "Oh, you darling," said Anne, and got a lick on the nose. "I say, isn't he grand?" said Dick, and gave Timothy a friendly smack that made the dog bound madly all round him. "I wish I had a dog like this," said Julian, who really loved dogs and had always wanted one of his own. "Oh, George, he's fine. Aren't you proud of him?" The little girl smiled, and her face altered at once and became sunny and pretty. She sat down on the sand, and her dog cuddled up to her, licking her wherever he could find a bare piece of skin. "I love him awfully," she said. "I found him out on the moors when he was just a pup, a year ago, and I took him home. At first, Mother liked him, but when he grew bigger, he got terribly naughty." "What did he do?" asked Anne. "Well, he's an awfully chewy kind of dog," said George. "He chewed up everything he could. A new rug Mother had bought, her nicest hat, Father's slippers, some of his papers and things like that. And he barked, too. I liked his bark, but Father didn't. He said it nearly drove him mad. He hit Timothy, and that made me angry, so I was awfully rude to him." "Did you get spanked?" said Anne. "I wouldn't like to be rude to your father. He looks fierce." George looked out over the bay. Her face had gone sulky again. "Well, it doesn't matter what punishment I got," she said. "But the worst part of all was when Father said I couldn't keep Timothy anymore, and Mother backed Father up and said Tim must go. I cried for days, and I never do cry, you know, because boys don't, and I like to be like a boy." "Boys do cry sometimes," began Anne, looking at Dick, who had been a bit of a crybaby 3 or 4 years back. Dick gave her a sharp nudge, and she said no more. George looked at Anne. "Boys don't cry," she said obstinately. "Anyway, I've never seen one, and I always try not to cry myself. It's so babyish. But I just couldn't help it when Timothy had to go. He cried too." The children looked with great respect at Timothy. They had not known that a dog could cry before.
"Do you mean he cried real tears?" asked Anne.
"No, not quite," said George. "He's too brave for that. He cried with his voice, howled and howled, and looked so miserable that he nearly broke my heart. And then I knew I couldn't possibly part with him."
"What happened then?" asked Julian.
"I went to Alf, a fisher boy I know," said George, "and I asked him if he'd keep Tim for me if I paid him all the pocket money I get. He said he would, and so he does. That's why I never have any money to spend. It all has to go on Tim. He seems to eat an awful lot, don't you, Tim?"
"Woof," said Tim,
and rolled over on his back, all his shaggy legs in the air. Julian tickled him.
"How do you manage when you want any sweets or ice creams?" said Anne,
who spent most of her pocket money on things of that sort.
"I don't manage," said George. "I go without, of course."
This sounded awful to the other.
"I say no."
The tinkle of an ice cream man's bell was heard in the distance. Julian felt in his pocket. He jumped up and rushed off jingling his money. In a few moments, he was back again, carrying 4 fat chocolate ice cream bars. He gave 1 to Dick and 1 to Anne, and then held one out to George. She looked at it longingly, but shook her head.
"No, thanks," she said. "You know what I just said? I haven't any money to buy them, so I can't share mine with you, and I can't take any from you. It's mean to take from people if you can't give even a little back."
"You can take from us," said Julian, trying to put the ice into George's brown hand. "We're your cousins."
"No, thanks," said George again, "though I do think it's nice of you."
She looked at Julian out of her blue eyes
and the boy frowned as he tried to think of a way to make the obstinate little girl take the ice. Then he smiled.
"Listen," he said. "You've got something we badly want to share. In fact, you've got a lot of things we'd like to share, if only you'd let us. You share those with us, and let us share things like ices with you. See?"
"What things have I got that you want to share?" asked George in surprise.
"You've got a dog," said Julian, patting the big black and white mongrel. "We'd love to share him with you. He's such a darling. And you've got a lovely island. We'd be simply thrilled if you'd share it sometimes. And you've got a wreck. We'd like to look at it and share it too. Ices and sweets aren't so good as those things, but it would be nice to make a bargain and share with each other."
George looked at the brown eyes that gazed steadily into hers. She couldn't help liking Julian. It wasn't her nature to share anything. She had always been an only child, a lonely, rather misunderstood little girl, fierce and hot-tempered. She had never had any friends of her own. Timothy looked up at Julian and saw that he was offering something nice and chocolatey to George. He jumped up and licked the boy with his friendly tongue.
"There you are, you see. Tim wants to be shared," said Julian with a laugh. "It would be nice for him to have three new friends."
"Yes, it would," said George, giving in suddenly and taking the chocolate bar.
"Thank you, Julian. I will share with you. But promise you'll never tell anyone at home that I'm still keeping Timothy."
"Of course we'll promise," said Julian. "But I can't imagine that your father or mother would mind, so long as Tim doesn't live in their house. How's the ice? Is it nice?"
"Ooh, the loveliest one I've ever tasted," said George, nibbling at it. "It's so cold. I haven't had one this year. It's simply delicious."
Timothy tried to nibble it too. George gave him a few crumbs at the end. Then she turned and smiled at the three children.
"You're nice," she said. "I'm glad you've come after all. Let's take a boat out this afternoon and row round the island to have a look at the wreck, shall we?"
"Rather,"
said all three at once. And even Timothy wagged his tail as if he understood.
Chapter 4. An Exciting Afternoon. They all had a bathe that morning, and the boys found that George was a much better swimmer than they were. She was very strong and very fast, and she could swim underwater too, holding her breath for ages.
"You're jolly good," said Julian admiringly. "It's a pity Anne isn't a bit better. Anne, you'll have to practice your swimming strokes hard, or you'll never be able to swim out as far as we do."
They were all very hungry at lunchtime. They went back up the cliff path, hoping there would be lots to eat. And there was. Cold meat and salad, plum pie and custard, and cheese afterwards. How the children tucked in!
"What are you going to do this afternoon?" asked George's mother.
"George is going to take us out in a boat to see the wreck on the other side of the island," said Anne. Her aunt looked most surprised.
"George is going to take you?" she said. "Why, George, what's come over you? You've never taken a single person before, though I've asked you to dozens of times."
George said nothing, but went on eating her plum pie. She hadn't said a word all through the meal. Her father had not appeared at the table, much to the children's relief.
"Well, George, I must say I'm pleased that you want to try and do what your father said," began her mother again, but George shook her head.
"I'm not doing it because I've got to," she said. "I'm doing it because I want to. I wouldn't have taken anyone to see my wreck, not even the Queen of England, if I didn't like them."
Her mother laughed. "Well, it's good news that you like your cousins," she said. "I hope they like you."
"Oh, yes," said Anne eagerly, anxious to stick up for her strange cousin. "We do like George, and we like Tim."
She was just about to say that they liked Timothy too, when she got such a kick on her ankle that she cried out in pain and the tears came into her eyes. George glared at her.
"George, why did you kick Anne like that when she was saying nice things about you?" cried her mother. "Leave the table at once. I won't have such behaviour."
George left the table without a word. She went out into the garden. She had just taken a piece of bread and cut herself some cheese. It was all left on her plate. The other three stared at it in distress. Anne was upset. How could she have been so silly as to forget she mustn't mention Tim?
"Oh, please call George back," she said. "She didn't mean to kick me. It was an accident."
But her aunt was very angry with George.
"Finish your meal," she said to the others. "I expect George will go into the sulks now. Dear, dear, she is such a difficult child."
The others didn't mind about George going into the sulks. What they did mind was that George might refuse to take them to see the wreck now. They finished the meal in silence. Their aunt went to see if Uncle Quentin wanted any more pie. He was having his meal in the study by himself. As soon as she had gone out of the room, Anne picked up the bread and cheese from George's plate and went out into the garden. The boys didn't scold her. They knew that Anne's tongue very often ran away with her, but she always tried to make up for it afterwards. They thought it was very brave of her to go and find George. George was lying on her back under a big tree in the garden. Anne went up to her.
"I'm sorry I nearly made a mistake, George," she said. "Here's your bread and cheese. I've brought it for you. I promise I'll never forget not to mention Tim again."
George sat up.
"I've a good mind not to take you to see the wreck," she said. "Stupid baby."
Anne's heart sank. This was what she had feared.
"Well," she said, "you needn't take me, of course, but you might take the boys, George. After all, they didn't do anything silly. And anyway, you gave me an awful kick. Look at the bruise."
George looked at it. Then she looked at Anne.
"But wouldn't you be miserable if I took Julian and Dick without you?" she asked. "Of course," said Anne. "But I don't want to make them miss a treat, even if I have to."
Then George did a surprising thing for her. She gave Anne a hug. Then she immediately looked most ashamed of herself, for she felt sure that no boy would have done that, and she always tried to act like a boy. "It's all right," she said gruffly, taking the bread and cheese. "You were nearly very silly, and I gave you a kick. So it's all square. Of course you can come this afternoon." Anne sped back to tell the boys that everything was all right, and in 15 minutes' time, four children ran down to the beach. By a boat was a brown-faced fisher boy, about 14 years old. He had Timothy with him.
"Boat's all ready, Master George," he said with a grin, "and Tim's ready too."
"Thanks," said George, and told the others to get in.
Timothy jumped in too, his big tail wagging 19 to the dozen. George pushed the boat off into the surf and then jumped in herself. She took the oars. She rowed splendidly, and the boat shot along over the blue bay. It was a wonderful afternoon, and the children loved the movement of the boat over the water. Timothy stood at the prow and barked whenever a wave reared its head.
"He's funny on a wild day," said George, pulling hard. "He barks madly at the big waves and gets so angry if they splash him. He's an awfully good swimmer."
"Isn't it nice to have a dog with us?" said Anne,
anxious to make up for her mistake.
"I do so like him."
"Ruff,"
said Timothy in his deep voice, and turned round to lick Anne's ear.
"I'm sure he knew what I said," said Anne in delight.
"Of course he did," said George. "He understands every single word."
"I say, we're getting near to your island now," said Julian in excitement. "It's bigger than I thought. And isn't the castle exciting?"
They drew near to the island,
And the children saw that there were sharp rocks all round about it. Unless anyone knew exactly the way to take, no boat or ship could possibly land on the shore of the rocky little island. In the very middle of it, on a low hill, rose the ruined castle. It had been built of big white stones, broken archways, tumble-down towers, ruined walls. That was all that was left of a once beautiful castle, proud and strong. Now the jackdaws nested in it, and the gulls sat on the topmost stones.
"It looks awfully mysterious," said Julian. "How I'd love to land there and have a look at the castle. Wouldn't it be fun to spend a night or two here?"
George stopped rowing. Her face lighted up.
"I say," she said in delight, "do you know, I never thought how lovely that would be, to spend a night on my island, to be there all alone, the four of us, to get our own meals and pretend we really lived there. Wouldn't it be grand?"
"Yes, rather," said Dick, looking longingly at the island. Do you suppose your mother would let us?"
"I don't know," said George. "She might. You could ask her."
"Can't we land there this afternoon?" asked Julian.
"No, not if you want to see the wreck," said George. "We've got to get back for tea today, and it will take all the time to row round to the other side of Kirin Island and back."
"Well, I'd like to see the wreck," said Julian, torn between the island and the wreck. "Here, let me take the oars for a bit, George. You can't do all the rowing."
"I can," said George, "but I'd quite enjoy lying back in the boat for a change. Look, I'll just take you by this rocky bit, and then you can take the oars till we come to another awkward piece. Honestly, the rocks around this bay are simply dreadful."
George and Julian changed places in the boat. Julian rowed well, but not so strongly as George. The boat sped along, rocking smoothly. They went right round the island and saw the castle from the other side. It looked more ruined on the side that faced the sea.
"The strong winds come from the open sea," explained George.
"Or over the wreck?" asked Julian, puzzled. "I should never know."
"Well, do you see that church tower on the mainland?" asked George. "And do you see the tip of that hill over there? Well, when you get them exactly in line with one another, between the two towers of the castle on the island, you are pretty well over the wreck. I found that out ages ago."
The children saw that the tip of the far-off hill and the church tower were practically in line when they looked at them between the two old towers of the island castle. They looked eagerly down into the sea to see if they could spy the wreck. The water was perfectly clear and smooth. There was hardly a wrinkle. Timothy looked down into it too, his head on one side, his ears cocked, just as if he knew what he was looking for. The children laughed at him.
"We're not exactly over it," said George, looking down too. "The water's so clear today that we should be able to see quite a long way down. Wait, I'll row a bit to the left."
"Ruff,"
said Timothy suddenly, and wagged his tail. And at the same moment, the three children saw something deep down in the water.
"It's the wreck," said Julian,
almost falling out of the boat in his excitement.
"I can see a bit of broken mast. Look, Dick, look."
All four children, and the dog too, gazed down earnestly into the clear water. After a little while, they could make out the outlines of a dark hulk, out of which the broken mast stood.
"It's a bit on one side," said Julian. "Poor old ship. How it must hate lying there, gradually falling to pieces. Oh, George, I wish I could dive down and get a closer look at it."
"Well, why don't you?" said George. "You've got your swimming trunks on. I've often dived down." "I'll come with you if you like, if Dick can keep the boat round about here. There's a current that is trying to take it out to sea. Dick, you'll have to keep working a bit with this oar to keep the boat in one spot."
The girl stripped off her jeans and jersey, and Julian did the same. They both had on bathing costumes underneath. George took a beautiful header off the end of the boat, deep down into the water. The others watched her swimming strongly downwards, holding her breath. After a bit, she came up, almost bursting for breath.
"Well, I went almost down to the wreck," she said. "It's just the same as it always is. Seaweedy and covered with limpets and things. Ah, I wish I could get right into the ship itself, but I never have enough breath for that. You go down now, Julian."
So down Julian went. But he was not so good at swimming deep underwater as George was, and he couldn't go down so far. He knew how to open his eyes underwater, so he was able to take a good look at the deck of the wreck. It looked very forlorn and strange. Julian didn't really like it very much. It gave him rather a sad sort of feeling. He was glad to go to the top of the water again and take deep breaths of air and feel the warm sunshine on his shoulders. He climbed into the boat.
"Whew, most exciting," he said. "Golly, wouldn't I just love to see that wreck properly? You know, go down under the deck into the cabins and look around. And, oh, suppose we could really find the boxes of gold."
"That's impossible," said George. "I told you, proper divers have already gone down and found nothing. What's the time? I say, we'll be late if we don't hurry back now." They did hurry back and managed to be only about 5 minutes late for tea.
"And I've had a lovely day too," said George rather gruffly. "Thanks to you. I'm glad you all came. We're going to have fun. And won't you love my castle and my little island?"
"Oh, yes," said Anne,
and fell asleep to dream of wrecks and castles and islands by the hundred.
Oh, when would George take them to her little island?
Chapter 5. A Visit to the Island. The children's aunt arranged a picnic for them the next day, and they all went off to a little cove, not far off, where they could bathe and paddle to their heart's content. They had a wonderful day, but secretly Julian, Dick and Anne wished they could have visited George's island. They would rather have done that than anything. George didn't want to go for the picnic, not because she disliked picnics, but because she couldn't take her dog. Her mother went with the children, and George had to pass a whole day without her beloved Timothy. "Bad luck," said Julian, who guessed what she was brooding about.
"I can't think why you don't tell your mother about old Tim. I'm sure she wouldn't mind you letting someone else keep him for you. I know my mother wouldn't."
"I'm not going to tell anybody but you," said George. "I get into awful trouble at home always. I dare say it's my fault, but I get a bit tired of it. You see, Daddy doesn't make much money with the learned books he writes, and he's always wanting to give Mother and me things he can't afford, so that makes him bad-tempered. He wants to send me away to a good school, but he hasn't got the money."
"I'm glad. I don't want to go away to school. I like being here. I couldn't bear to part with Timothy."
"You'd like boarding school," said Anne. "We all go. It's fun."
"No, it isn't," said George obstinately. "It must be awful to be one of a crowd, to have other girls all laughing and yelling round you. I should hate it."
"No, you wouldn't," said Anne. "All that is great fun. It would be good for you, George, I should think."
"If you start telling me what is good for me, I shall hate you," said George, suddenly looking very fierce. "Mother and Father are always saying that things are good for me, and they are always the things I don't like."
all right," said Julian, beginning to laugh. "My goodness, how you do go up in smoke. Honestly, I believe anyone could light a cigarette from the sparks that fly from your eyes."
That made George laugh, though she didn't want to. It was really impossible to sulk with good-tempered Julian. They went off to bathe in the sea for the fifth time that day. Soon they were all splashing about happily, and George found time to help Anne to swim. The little girl hadn't got the right stroke, and George felt really proud when she had taught her.
Oh, thanks, said Anne, struggling along. I'll never be as good as you, but I'd like to be as good as the boys.
As they were going home, George spoke to Julian.
Could you say that you want to go and buy a stamp or something, she said. Then I could go with you and just have a peep at old Tim. He'll be wondering why I haven't taken him out all day.
Right, said Julian. I don't want stamps, but I could do with an ice. Dick and Anne can go home with your mother and carry the things. I'll just go and tell Aunt Fanny.
He ran up to his aunt.
Do you mind if I go and buy some ice creams? He asked. We haven't had one today. I won't be long. Can George go with me?
I don't expect she'll want to, said his aunt, but you can ask her.
George, come with me,
yelled Julian, setting off to the little village at a great pace. George gave a sudden grin and ran after him. She soon caught him up and smiled gratefully at him.
Thanks, she said. You go and get the ice creams, and I'll have a look at Tim.
They parted. Julian bought 4 ice creams and turned to go home. He waited about for George, who came running up after a few minutes.
Golly, said Julian, his eyes shining. That would be marvellous. Will you really take us tomorrow? Come on, let's tell the others.
The 4 children sat in the garden eating their ices. Julian told them what George had said. They all felt excited. George was pleased. She had always felt quite important before, when she had haughtily refused to take any of the other children to see Kirin Island. But it felt much nicer somehow to have consented to row her cousins there.
I used to think it was much, much nicer always to do things on my own, she thought, as she sucked the last bits of her ice. But it's going to be fun doing things with Julian and the others.
The children were sent to wash themselves and to get tidy before supper. They talked eagerly about the visit to the island next day. Their aunt heard them and smiled.
Well, I really must say I'm pleased that George is going to share something with you, she said. Would you like to take your dinner there and spend the day?
It's hardly worthwhile rowing all the way there and landing unless you're going to spend some hours there.
Oh, Aunt Fanny, it would be marvellous to take our dinner, cried Anne.
George looked up.
Are you coming too, Mother? She asked. You don't sound at all as if you want me to, said her mother in a hurt tone. You looked cross yesterday, too, when you found I was coming. No, I shan't come tomorrow, but I'm sure your cousins must think you are a queer girl, never to want your mother to go with you.
George said nothing. She hardly ever did say a word when she was scolded. The other children said nothing too. They knew perfectly well that it wasn't that George didn't want her mother to go. It was just that she wanted Timothy with her.
Anyway, I couldn't come, went on Aunt Fanny. I've some gardening to do. You'll be quite safe with George. She can handle a boat like a man.
End of Disc 1.